Welcome to Drunk as a Poet on Payday. I'm your host, Jason Gray. Our guest today is Cynthia Marie Hoffman, whose new book, Exploding Head, is a collection of prose poems that looks at growing up with obsessive-compulsive disorder and only discovering that's what it was as an adult. Her poems are imaginative, mysterious, and beautiful. Hoffman is the author of three previous collections of poems, Call Me When You Want to Talk About the Tombstones, Paper Doll Fetus, and Sightseer, which won the Lexi Rudnitsky First Book Prize from Persea Books. Individually, her poems are published widely in places like Blackbird, The Believer, The Los Angeles Review, and Smartish Pace. She is a former Diane Middlebrook Poetry Fellow at the Wisconsin Institute for Creative Writing, a director's guest at the Civitella Ranieri Foundation, and a recipient of an Individual Artist Fellowship from the Wisconsin Arts Board.
It starts. It starts when you are alone in your room, looking up at the window with pink curtains. You count the edges of the window, right, left, top, bottom. Vaguely, you understand not to look at the corners where the edges touch. Beyond the window, minnows swarm the creek, each a slim number one, tallying each other as they pass. Tick, 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 in the dark beneath the eroded tree. The curtains are covered with constellations of glow-in-the-dark stars because you are not allowed to stick them on the ceiling. The curtains hide the corners of the window, but you know they are there, just as you know the minnows are there in the cool water. Everything is all right. The pattern of your counting makes a four. When the lights go out, the stars illuminate two paths converging toward the heavens.
Well, Cynthia Marie Hoffman, welcome to the show. Thank you for reading It Starts for us. And thank you for being the very first guest on the podcast.
Thank you. Excited really, to be here.
I'm very glad to start with you. And we've known each other for a long time. And we kind of both started our careers, poetry careers, around the same time. So it's been sort of a gift to me to kind of grow up as a poet alongside you and to read each of the new books as they came into the world. And so now we have Exploding Head. It's really a fantastic book, and I'm glad to see that you're getting lots of mentions and reviews are starting to come out. So it's terrific. And I sort of wish it all the success in the world, of course.
Thank you.
I wondered if you would maybe just start by describing the book a little to us and talk about its genesis. I mean, how were you writing? How long were you writing it? You know, how did it come together? You know, and what was it like to write about these kind of, what I would imagine, some scary things?
Sure. I'm talking about the book in terms of it being an OCD memoir in prose poems. So it's 64 total prose poems, and they are about my lifelong journey with obsessive compulsive disorder. And I've been thinking of it as a memoir because it's really the type of book that I feel moves from beginning to end. And I anticipate that people will hopefully read it that way from beginning to end. Prose poems are just little paragraphs, so it's almost like reading a bunch of little paragraphs Right. Moving through my life with OCD. I started writing about OCD maybe 10 years ago, Oh, wow. And it did take that long to get through this book. It was really scary to write about these scary things, especially because I hadn't talked about having OCD in detail at all in my life, really. I hadn't shared what the intrusive thoughts are like, how scary my inner world is of imagination. And kind of putting that down on paper was my first time learning how to communicate it to the world. Of course, my world is very small. It started with the four other people in my poetry group around my dining room table years ago. And so I had that really small, safe group of people who were so supportive. And I started writing and I said, I'm writing a new project, but I don't want to talk about what it is yet. I was too afraid to talk about it. And the only words that I could feel comfortable with were the ones that I had put down on the page in poetry form that I felt were beautiful and structured, and it was kind of a way of distancing myself. Mm-hmm. I think with poetry, you can create an art object, really. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so that made me feel safe and comfortable that I was producing something, hopefully, of worth and of meaning outside of my own personal experience.
Right. Okay. Great. Sticking with that, I mean, I'm kind of curious how you assembled the book. You know, you mentioned that you're thinking about it as a memoir and you're hoping people read it, you know, sort of front to back that way. And that's kind of, I mean, as reading it myself, that's sort of how I thought about it. Not so much in the terms of memoir, but just that it, you know, it had a very distinct arc and order and almost novelistic, like almost as if you wrote it, you know, one first poem, second poem, third poem, you know, I know you didn't, but you know, it does read that way. I think it's very successful in that kind of reading experience. So, I mean, how was it to assemble this out of these disparate, separate poems? And did you like, once you were putting them together, did you revise any of the poems? Like, not sort of separately as a poem, but as a part of the larger project, I guess I'm kind of curious about.
Yeah, it was tough, actually. I think when I first had the idea to start writing about OCD, I went about it in the same way that I went about, for example, my second collection, Paper Doll Fetus, which is about, you know, based in research, and it's about the history of medicine and all the things that can go wrong with birth and fetal development. And I sort of had a list of all of the possible topics related to that central idea. And so I imagined myself writing about OCD in much the same way. Hmm. And I thought, OCD is my main umbrella topic. What are all the other things? What are all the other ways I can approach this topic to generate a project, you know, potentially a full-length book? And so I thought, I'm going to write about the things that I'm afraid of. I'm going to write about a little bit going to therapy. I'm going to write about hopefully getting better. And the things that I was afraid of went in different categories, like guns, car accidents, drowning, things like that. Mm-hmm. So I wrote toward each of those topics. And after a while, I thought, okay, I'm going to have to see what I have. How does this all come together? And I started looking for that arc. You know, we always talk about poetry collection having an arc, right, which is kind of like a plot, you know, for if it's a novel or memoir. So my arc, I thought, had to be how my OCD got better. Hmm. And I thought, okay, I'm going to find, if I take all the gun poems, am I less afraid of guns? Did my gun obsession get better? And really the answer was no. And I struggled for years thinking, I can't write a book about OCD if I'm not better. And that was a challenge. And I had some great conversations with friends who encouraged me that if we always wrote about things only after we had healed from them and we looked back on them with 2020 vision, we would never have that raw, urgent, in the trenches kind of grief work, mental illness work, all of these things that are in the now. So I eventually released the pressure from myself of feeling like I need to go to therapy and get a lot better before I am able to talk about these topics, or I have a responsibility to take care of myself in some way. And then I'm going to represent, you know, OCD by speaking about it publicly. And that was just, that's a lot of pressure, and it's unrealistic to put on any writer. Yeah, so I got caught up in that in my head for a little while. And that was affecting how I thought about resolving the arc in the book. So eventually I had to just remind myself, I'm writing about my personal lived experience. That's all I know. Mm-hmm. And that's what I know best. Mm-hmm. So let me look at, you know, what have I learned? If it's not OCD necessarily getting better, but how have I grown over a period of time? And although I said in 2013, when I started writing this, I'm writing a memoir of poems, in whatever way I had initially imagined that, it was about 8 years later where it suddenly hit me, oh my gosh, this could be a memoir. In a different way, I thought of it as a way of guiding the reader toward a certain experience of reading, where, like I mentioned, poetry books, you know, you tend to, I'm going to read this poem on page 50 and then flip around to page 20, you know.
Sure.
I wanted to kind of guide a road or a path. Like, this is my map to creating this. So I plopped all the poems in chronological order, in the order of lived experience. And I suddenly realized there was healing there. There was an arc there all along. I had gotten better because the poems that I had written about my childhood were very dark and scary and alone. And the poems that I had written about my current life in more recent times, there was a self-compassion there that I don't think I had even realized was there in my life. So I discovered that over the course of reorganizing. And once I had put everything in chronological order, I had a big problem. Because when you're writing single poems just to get published in a journal or to share, or, you know, and you have to establish certain things like I'm a child, I have OCD, there's an angel in my bedroom at night, and all of these things that I had to keep introducing over and over again. As soon as you build the book and put them together, you don't need that repetition anymore. Right. The poems can rely on each other. So I had so many poems in the first section that said, you were a child. You are just a child. You were a child. It was ridiculous. I had to cut so much of that so I laid out all the poems and I said, what does the reader know on each page? You know, like if I go to page 2, like what have I introduced in page 1 that the reader knows? Page 2, I don't have to say that again. Page 3, okay, now they know there's an angel. Page 4, now they know there's a fear of guns, etc.
Yeah.
So it was a tough revision. I wish I had envisioned it chronologically in the beginning, but I think I would have perhaps produced a very different work.
Oh, I think so. Yeah, I think you would have been felt constrained in a way that you weren't doing it the way you did. I wonder if you would have thought about considering actually writing it, not so much as prose poems memoir, but actually just a straight prose memoir or something, if you were kind of started to tackle it that way. I don't know if that ever came. Too scary. Okay.
I've been writing essays now.
Yeah.
I've just 2023 last year was my year of the essay, where I said, I'm going to, you know, I started out writing stories and fiction and essays. And I don't know at what point, probably in later college years, I thought, I'm a poet. You know, I announced myself to myself as a poet and closed doors on myself. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. And also, I was probably busy. I work a full-time job. Sure. I'm a parent. You know, we're all busy. So I just focused on poetry. And I'm relearning or becoming reacquainted with a part of myself that used to love to tell stories. Mm-hmm. And argue in a chronological fashion, linear fashion, you know, not that essays and memoir need to do that in a linear way, certainly, but the essay is a different beast.
Yeah, definitely. I had a similar, you know, thing in my youth. You know, I started writing stories when I was little and even through high school and stuff, and then finally came to poetry and just sort of felt, I guess, better at that and kept going and kind of left the other sort of prose behind. So, yeah. And sort of returning to it now as well.
That's great.
Yeah.
Glad to hear it.
It's a nice, you know, thing to give yourself something else to do too, in a way, you know, changes. It's good for your mind, I think.
And it's a different way of thinking. Yeah. And also, years ago, I drafted a novel, which is sitting in a drawer. And I realized after I had done that kind of as an exercise, it was a lot of fun. It was this spooky, scary sort of novel that takes place over the course of 1 week. And I spent, you know, almost a year writing this thing and nothing ever really came of it. I didn't go back to revise it. But when I started writing my third collection of poetry, my poetry was completely different. And it was because I had spent that time crafting in a different form.
Yeah. Well, do you think that is where you sort of came to writing prose poems? I mean, you've talked about sort of writing exclusively prose poems for a long time now. And I guess I'm curious if that's where that maybe that came from, or if it was some other reason, you know, what was your draw to this form? And, you know, actually, do you ever see yourself returning to lineated poems?
Yes, I'm actually writing in lines again. I'm trying to rediscover lines and what they mean. But I think you're right. I probably did start to write prose poetry after writing the novel. And it was just that I've always been in love with the sentence. Mm-hmm. You know, when we both went to George Mason, mm-hmm. and I was taking classes on teaching, and those teaching classes, I was focusing on something called sentence combining, which is a way of taking a sentence. I mean, you could do it with multiple sentences, but what I like to do is a single sentence. You can select it from anywhere. Long sentence with different phrases and pieces of the sentence, kind of cutting them all out into pieces and thinking about how you can shift them around on the table. So what happens if you know if there are some kittens in a bag? What happens if you end on the bag? What happens if you end on the kittens? What happens if it's tomorrow in the beginning of the sentence, or later in the sentence you find out it's tomorrow? So it's a way of thinking about, I have X amount of information that I want to communicate in this sentence. There are multiple options for how I present that information. What information do I put first? What impact does that have? What do I put last? What impact does that have? And really, this is the work of poetry. Mm-hmm. You know, we can write in fragments, but my poems tend to be mostly fully formed sentences. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like those are the notes in the song. For me, mm-hmm. of poetry. Okay. It's the sentence.
Nice way to put it. Yeah.
So the line is just less important. It's almost, you know, I just really tuned in to the musicality of the sentence as a structure.
Okay.
And so the line does something else on top of that, where mm-hmm. it interrupts it, creates a break, adds another layer of tension. But I feel so comfortable with the sentence that dropping the line felt natural to me. As soon as I was working in prose, I was just comfortable again. Like mm-hmm. There are so many different ways that I can create musicality within the sentence without having to worry about the line,
sure.
And meaning. And I just felt that it was sort of stripping it bare, stripping out the line mm-hmm. breaks and just letting me see the sentences as they are. Some people write this way where they write in prose and then they break it in lines. I've never done that. If I'm writing a lineated poem, I always write in the lines. But I always kind of on the side margin when I'm writing a poem or I'm revising something, I go back to that sentence combining. It's something I've always naturally done, and write out different versions of each sentence.
Wow.
Or like move things around.
Yeah.
And that works on the sentence level. It works with lines in a poem, sure. and it works with poems in a book.
Right. Okay. That's great. That makes sense. Yeah. I don't think I've heard that term before. That's a great strategy to actually really get your, you know, writing muscles going. I mean, like, how do you, you've got all of these options. And so how do you, you know, craft, you know, this the best way? So looking at it in this sort of series of options, I think is pretty smart.
And sometimes it can be a distraction because the options are just in front of me. I'm like, okay, there are seven different ways to write this mm-hmm. sentence or to organize the information in this sentence. And I just want to try it all the different ways.
Sure. Huh. Well, that's great. Well, let's take a pause and let's hear you read another poem.
Yes, so this poem, You with the Getting Shot, it's about it's hopefully accomplishing one of the hardest things I was trying to communicate in this book about OCD, is that OCD manifests itself in many various ways, but one of the ways that impacts me is the intrusive thoughts, which aren't so much thoughts or worries in words like, what if I'm shot? What if there's a gun? I actually visualize the thing happening. So it can be very violent, very dark, very scary, sort of flashes. And when you have OCD, there's this interior thing happening to me kind of all day long. And then there's the life I'm really living. That's the real world. So this kind of gets at, I hope, the simultaneity of these two things occurring. You with the getting shot. It is a crisp autumn day when you get shot walking by the parking lot on your way to the lake. An arm goes up. A gun blows a hard kiss. You continue down the path, stepping around the acorns. You already got shot twice this morning. Always you with the getting shot. You need to just let it pass. The lake goes on dragging this heavens this way and that. Your skin grows over the bullet. You sit at the shore with your back to the park pavilion, where someone dismounts a bicycle and pulls out a gun. Your body fills like penny jars with bullets, heavy on the park bench. You watch the clouds getting snarled in rippling water, angels drowning in their tangled skirts. Someone creeps in the trees. Someone's breathing down your back. There are no bones left in your body that aren't a clattering procession of bullets. You just need to rest for a little bit by the lake. One after another, the white knots bob toward the shore, but never fully arrive. Even if they did, even if they tumbled, gasping at your feet in the gauzy threads, you with your buckshot hands, your mind a shuddering animal hunkered down inside your skull, heaven help you, couldn't do a thing about it.
Thank you. God, it's fabulous. Tell me, I guess, a little bit more about, you know, the manifestation of OCD in the poems. I guess I wonder if your OCD like extends to writing. Like, do you feel, does that affect your writing at all? The actual, like, you know, is there a compulsion to write, or when you're writing, does something kick in or anything like that?
I think the times that OCD troubles me when I'm writing are when I get hooked on repeatedly reading something over and over, like the sentence combining maybe, but OCD form, where it's just, I've written something and I get stuck on just reading it over and over, like 7 times, 8 times, like I'm not even counting how many times. And I just read it so many times that it loses all meaning. And it's just a compulsion to reread things. Mm-hmm. And it's irritating and boring because I'll reread emails and texts. And I think sometimes how much could I accomplish if I didn't have to spend another 5 minutes rereading this text I just sent, if I could just send the text and move on to the next thing? Right. Some days are better than others. And often, though, I think sometimes it can help because I am rereading things. There's a point at which rereading helps with revision. It helps with kind of memorizing and hearing and feeling the music in the, you know, in the rhythm and the pacing of the work. But, and I'm reading it in my head, not out loud with the OCD. Everything is internal. But then there's a point where it doesn't benefit me at all. And it's just the OCD and it's just irritating. But I think that as far as it affecting the poems, I think I was able to kind of come at it from an external to OCD kind of part of myself that was the poet part, where I'm like, I'm building this distance, and the distance is the poem, the art piece of the poem that I'm crafting about my OCD as a topic. Mm-hmm. So there is kind of a level of distance there, but it's also the most personal thing I've ever written. Right. I'm actually talking about real things that go on in my mind that I never talked about.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you about some of the specific things in the poems. I mean, you have a lot of recurring figures, or recurring kind of like localities. But specifically, I think the angel, the figure of the angel that appears in the poem. Sometimes it's multiple or plural angels. But what is the angel to you? I guess, you know, this is a kind of a big figure, you know, mythic, symbolic, at least in certain cases, you know, it has a religious connotation. I don't know that that's the way it is here. It doesn't feel like it to me. The angel doesn't seem religious. I mean, God is mentioned, you know, comes up, but that I'm just curious what the angel is to you, and how it was to write about this kind of thing that could go sideways probably pretty easily and into something you maybe didn't want, you know?
Yeah. This is such an interesting question because this was definitely something that I was asked a lot from poets who are thinking about, you know, we think about symbolism and meaning and, you know, windows are in my book a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, what do the windows mean? Windows are symbolic for so many things, internal, external, looking through, window to the soul, et cetera. Right. And so, of course, obviously angels, it's such an iconic thing. And I had someone actually read my manuscript and suggest, wow, you really need to build up this angel thing. Like, what does it mean to you? Do more, do some research. And that's very enticing to me because my three previous books were heavily based on research. I always reach outside myself to write. And so I thought, okay, yeah, I'm going to get all these books. I'm going to read up on angels. And really what I came back to was where I started with this book. I want it to just be about me. This is the one book that is entirely inside my head because that's the story that I'm telling. It's not influenced by research about other things. It doesn't go off into other, you know, worlds where I used to always love to, you know, go on long research trips and find new information. So I really, to me, it was actually a challenge to stay in my own life. And the angel, if I had to answer that question, it's frustrating because I don't know what the angel was. So I was a child and there was an angel in my bedroom at night. That's what I know.
Okay.
There was an angel there. And it was a kind of, obviously it was, a figment of my imagination. And I went to Sunday school and church as a child. So obviously angels meant something to me at the time. But he was scary. Really? And the thing in my OCD mind was this angel would stand by my closet door. And if I let my guard down, if I wasn't counting, if I wasn't concentrating, he would lean over and whisper into my ear the secret of heaven. Huh. And people have asked me, why would that be so scary?
Yeah, right.
Why
didn't you, want to know?
I don't know. The OCD told me this was a scary thing. Huh. I just did not want to know. Huh. I don't know why. So there isn't really an answer. It's just something that was a part of me as a child, a part of my imagination, a part that felt very real. And the angel actually was in every room I've ever been in my life.
Wow.
So whenever I would go to bed at night, I'd click on in my mind somehow the presence of this angel standing by a door or a closet door who was just always with me every night. And when I started writing about the angel, he went away.
Really?
Which was kind of a weird thing to get through. I realized after a while, angel's not here anymore. So I have another poem in the book about the angel just not being there and worrying about why is it not there?
Right.
You know, did I do something wrong? What did I, you know, why was it there? And sort of, if you have something accompanying you for so many years, it's a part of you. You know, there's this weird sort of, okay, that terrified me, but it's a loss.
Yeah. I mean, I would imagine you missed it, even if it was also
in
frightening.
In a weird way.
But it's always been there. Now it's not. And wow.
And I think that speaks to the power of speaking about things.
Yeah.
Definitely. You know, I had kept so many elements of my OCD hidden for so long, and good or bad, I was able to, because most of it is internal. Like I do a lot of counting and obsessing and mental compulsions, but I'm not doing a lot of exterior things that people notice. There is one poem in the book that talks about blinking. And I used to do that. That was an external thing and people started noticing it, and I was able to replace it with something else in order to hide it so people wouldn't know what was going on. The scary thing that I didn't understand.
Yeah.
I didn't want anyone to know was happening to me.
Huh. Wow. I noticed in the book there's a lot of mention of, I think even the angel has lidless eyes, and there's a lot of like eyes that don't have lids. I mean, is that coming from there, you think? Like that blinking thing you had to do with, so if you didn't have lids, you... I don't know. It just came to mind as you were talking about that.
Yeah, that's interesting. And that's another one of those things where you can find meaning in reading the book that perhaps I didn't or did intend, but kind of subconsciously.
Right.
You know, that's what's so fascinating to me about working on a collection of poems that come together as a group, like essentially a project book, because the relationship between the poems, the way it reveals your own obsessions that you might not even realize. I also did a lot of cataloging as I created this book because repetition is critical for making my argument. Mm-hmm. OCD for me and for most people is about the obsession, the constant over and over. I can't stop checking something. I can't stop imagining something. I can't stop counting.
there's, you know, a couple of things that, you know, as I was reading the book poems that, you know, came to mind. Of course, the idea of like a haunted house, you know, makes a lot of sense. But the other thing that to me was sort of more interesting, I mean, I love haunted house stories, but, you know, was, I forget, I don't know which poem I was reading, but the word that popped in my head was chiaroscuro, you know, the art technique of shadow, you know, light and shadow. And because, I mean, as dark as some of the poems are, and the book is, there's a lot, oftentimes a lot of light, or, you know, a hint of light. And just, I started to imagine the poems as if they were being, you know, enacted, like a trompe l'oeil kind of, you know, people setting, you know, on a stage and sort of enacting a painting. And, you know, that's sort of what came to mind. And I don't know exactly why, but, you know, I just, I don't know. I kind of wanted to mention that because I thought that was kind of interesting, that to me that these poems seem to have that, as dark as they are, sort of a balance of this hint or light kind of running through them too, and they sort of have that, you know, larger field.
Yeah, I think yeah. that there, you know, there is a dark, like we usually think of dark and light. So dark is sad and scary and depressed, mm-hmm. and light is happy and, you know, enlightening and wonderful. And I always think, I don't know why, but ever since I was a child, the angel to me is, you know, white. Like it was mm-hmm. a white, my closet, it was always standing at the closet doors. Really, it was probably just the light of the yeah. closet doors. I was really little and looked like an angel in the dark of my room. So there was this just white figure. And mm-hmm. I always think of heaven and dying as a light, you know, mm-hmm. like there's a poem that talks about, well, it's not really about suicide, but it does say, let's end this now. And it says, step out into the light. And it's,
right.
you know, you think of, okay, you think of things shutting off as being a darkness. But mm-hmm. for me, for some reason, I imagine this blinding light. And that is, for me, I guess, the heaven and the angel that I internalized at some point when I was really little.
Wow. Yeah, that's, I mean, it's amazing to have had that, such a thing happen when you were small and carry through your whole life like that, to end up here, you creating this wonderful book. Well, I want to just ask you one more question. So, you know, poets, we don't get a lot of chance to celebrate, and, you know, our victories are few and far between often. So you have a new book out. How are you celebrating?
I don't know the answer to that question. I really have thought about that a bit, because we do talk about that, like, and celebrate the work that you've done,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And I think more, what I'm trying to do this time more than others is honor the work
okay.
that I've done. And so that in a lot of ways feels like more work. I'm trying to, you know, talk about OCD. I also feel like it's an important topic that mm-hmm. I finally do want to talk about. So mm-hmm. I'm taking every possible opportunity to do so. And I want to share my work. I want it to find readers.
Yeah.
I, you know, attend as many readings as I can, and I read as many other books as I can. And mm-hmm. those connections are so important to me. And already, since I've started sharing my own poems about OCD, I've connected with other poets and writers who also have OCD, who are willing to share that with me.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps they're not quite writing about it yet, but mm-hmm. they will write about it. You know, I would love to read more on this topic from others. And there are a lot of us out there.
Yeah, I'll bet. And you're starting something. That's great. I'm glad you're doing it. And thank you again for talking to me today, Cynthia. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
All good things to you and to the book. I'd like you to take us out with a poem, another poem from the book.
Sure. I'll read Trash Angel.
Great.
This cigarette fallen on the gas station tarmac in its long white robe. This half-eaten fruit in the trash bin turning to rot. These napkins swept in an updraft like hands lifted to prayer. There's nothing to be afraid of. You do not fear the pine tree covered in snow, despite its ghostly dress. The forest is chainsawed at the ankles. Have mercy. Angels are moved by the winds, just as you are, just as the scarf blows over your eyes the moment your child stumbles. You can sometimes protect them, sometimes not. The rats in the sewer receive their blessings quickly before the paper wings floating past disintegrate in the current. You could, perhaps, be the angel. Except when winter comes, you are the one driving the truck home with the angel strapped to the roof. A jingle on the radio. You will bind its body in holiday lights. Feed it water in a bowl for a little while, for as long as it keeps its sweetness, until you have no use for it anymore.
That was Cynthia Marie Hoffman and her new book, Exploding Head. My thanks again to her for joining me on the show. Please check the show notes for links to find out more about her work and to pick up your own copy of the book. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to the show and share with your friends. This was Drunk as a Poet on Payday. Thanks for listening.